Good to talk with you again. Before I get started, tell me what you all would like to
Can you hear me? It cut out a little bit there, but yes, you're still coming through.
Well, I'm in my car parked. Let me take it off speaker, and maybe that will make a difference. Hold on. Is that better?
That's coming through much clearer.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good. All right. Before I get started, tell me what you all would like to start with.
I would say just a continuation of what we went through last call.
Okay. Happy to do that. Now, I want to emphasize, I start almost every call with a question that sounds like that. What's on your top plate? Anything you want to discuss? And what we found is that when you start the conversation with a client that way, a couple of things happen. One, you show that you are a better listener than a talker, which sometimes in our industry is not always the case. The other thing, and I think more importantly, is if a client has something on their mind and you begin or an FA begins without addressing that, the client is never a very good listener. So I will start almost every call with something along the lines that I did today, which was, before I get started, tell me what you would like to discuss. When you use this, even if a client, and I'm repeating a little bit, even if a client has nothing particular to discuss, you have demonstrated you want to know what's on their mind. All right, we got a lot of homework for today. I don't know if we'll get through it all. I'd rather get through fewer things and do it well than try to rush. Let's start with those two lists that I ask you to bring to the call. I know you've done some segmentation in your practice, but segmentation is an ongoing thing. Sometimes things sneak into your practice accounts. You don't know where they came from, reassignments from people who are leaving, whatever. I just want to take a look at your practice and as to the number of people. So as you look at your list, Chris, grab the which list do you have first?
Well, I have both of them right in front of me. So I don't know if you want to start production or ask.
Let's start with production. Tell me what the number 10 person on the list has in production.
Let's see. 21,000.
Okay. Tell me what the median, just guess. Put your finger right in the middle of the list and tell me what that number is.
Of the 10? Of the top 10?
No, of the whole practice.
Oh, okay. I'd say probably five.
Okay, and then look at the last person on the list. I know you do some 401k business, and that sometimes can make things look funny, but the last person on the list who is not part of the 401k?
$75. $75. That's probably an annual fee.
Okay. Well, the best or the worst story, depending on how you want to look at it, I was dealing with a UPS guy 4 or 5 years ago down in Florida, and I asked him that question. I said, "What's the last person on your list?" And he said a negative $37. And I said, "How do you do a negative $37?" And he kind of gasped, literally, and said, "I waive fees. I'm paying this lady to do no business with me." So,
well, hold on, I got a negative 43.88, so I'm in the same boat. Negative 43.88.
Okay.
The
question is, as you look at that list, Chris, are there people that should not be in your practice?
Where I'm running into is that the lower accounts, the lower gross accounts, are kids of the higher of some of my best accounts. You know,
are they adult children or are they?
Adult children.
Okay, so, well, as you look at these people, I mean, so these are butlers. You have to keep them.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you gave me a number last time we spoke. You had 100 clients and 50 butlers. So the people at the bottom of the list are butlers and are receiving butler contact.
For the most part, yes. And I'm sure if I go through it, there's a couple in there that probably shouldn't be in there, that maybe they're not related to some of my larger accounts. And so I need to do something about that.
Well, you do. It's not like you've got 500 households and you've got to really get it down a bunch. But it's something you got to work on. As I said a minute ago, it's always part of what you're doing. You always want to be running a concierge practice for a limited number of people. And when that number starts sneaking up, it takes your time. It takes everybody's time. So it's good to review it. Now, let's look on the asset side. What's the number 10 person on the asset side look like?
Okay. Six million.
All right. What about the median?
A million.
All right. And then the last person on the list, and it's probably going to be about the same kind of conversation we just had.
Can't be negative, I don't think, but let's see. Well, yeah, see, the last one on the list is $11.59, and I know that's a grandchild of one of actually my largest account.
Okay. All right. Well, you know how to handle it. Yeah. All right. Now, is that grandchild, do you have the grandchild's parents as a client?
Did, and then they passed, yes.
Okay, all right. Well, two things on this list. Number one, this is a good exercise. Do it on a continual basis to make sure that you're keeping your practice as lean as possible. The other is look for opportunities for householding. At Merrill Lynch, they link statements, so I got all my statements in one envelope. But every once in a while, the link would break, and I'd get like 7 statements. So it's just, again, just from a client's point of view, you want to always make sure those households are linked. As you look at your list, and then I want to move on. As you look at your list, it doesn't matter which one. Do you see people on that list that should be out of your practice, but you don't? It's just. Put it this way. Do you see people on your list that if you got an 8 cats out, you wouldn't care?
Yeah, go ahead, Mike. You can take this one.
Yes.
All right. Well, those are people who probably, if you wouldn't care, they probably should not be in your practice. I'm not telling you got to get them down. I'm just saying the fewer households that you have, the stronger you can make your brand and deliver the type of service that makes you attractive not only to your existing clients but to potential clients. All that makes sense?
Yes.
Okay. Now, one other thing. Your median in assets is $1 million. You told me a couple weeks ago that your minimum was around 500. As you look at these numbers, does it give you any more clarity on what the right minimum would be?
Yeah, it does.
What is that number?
Well, it probably should be a million, since that's a median, because you want to build the upper half versus the lower half of your book. The problem is that we're kind of in a market where. It's, I don't know, Mike, what do you think? Do you think this is a good market for a bunch of million-dollar accounts in our area here?
Yeah, it's a little tougher, yeah.
Yeah, it's a little tougher. I mean, I've done that before where I said, okay, I'm only taking a million and up. And I kind of felt like I was sitting around twiddling my thumbs a little bit because I couldn't find those type of accounts, you know, as often as I'd like to find those type of accounts. So I kind of took the approach where, okay, I'm going to keep moving, and then I'll just stumble upon, you know, so I'm going to take the minimum of a half, keep moving. Okay, then I come across one with 750 or 6 or 7, and then, you know, we'll see. It just kind of keeps me moving versus, you know, sitting around kind of not being able to find the $1 million, not keeping active.
How big is Tacoma?
What do you think?
Your market.
What is it?
250, 300?
I don't know. I don't know the population. I would say it's a mid-size and small to mid. Not even close to Seattle. Not even close to Bellevue. But I'm sure they're out there. I know that's where you're getting at. They're out there. But.
Well, here's what. Is Merrill Lynch there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is Morgan Stanley there?
Yeah.
All the major competitors, and it's probably full of Edward D. Jones people. So
And the Merrill Lynch is probably 12 advisors, and the Morgan Stanley's probably 12 advisors, wouldn't you think, 15? And we have about 20, maybe.
Okay. Here's what I'd like for you to hear. I love being a consultant. It's much less stressful than running an office. I get to tell you what I think is in your best interest. You get to decide how to execute it. There are accounts out there who would love to be in your practice. There are people out – I may have shared this with you. A friend here in Nashville who moved a $5 million relationship 2 years ago, 3 years ago, because he hadn't had a meaningful conversation with his advisor in 9 months. And you say those things can't happen. They happen a lot. So here's the thought I'd like to leave you with this part is you know your market better than I do. It looks to me like a million would be the right number, but if you're going to go with 500, you really have to enforce it. I'd rather you be at 500 and enforce it than say I'm in a million and you're violating it all the time. Also, your minimum, Chris, is sending a message to your prospective clients and your existing clients that, you know, you run bigger amounts of money. So I'm not telling you to change your minimum. You pick the highest minimum you can take and enforce it.
Yeah.
Got it?
Fair enough. Yep. Mike, you want to add something to that? What's yours?
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah, and when you go to your referral sources and tell them that, again, that positions you in the market. All right, let's talk a little bit. We talked last week or 2 weeks ago about clients recognizing value, and that being the best time to have a referral conversation. Did you have anybody that recognized your value that usually came through? That usually comes through the saying thank you. Anything like that happen?
I've been out, so I have not. No, so.
Okay. What I would like you to do is continually be aware of people recognizing value. Chris, I really appreciate how you guided me through these markets. Chris, I really appreciate the planning you've done, so on and so forth. That is an opportunity to have a referral conversation. You confirm that you heard it, and then you decide whether or not it's the appropriate time. It's of all the things that we teach, I feel that's the easiest way to get into referral conversations. All right, let's move on to the. I sent you that document. Early this morning. What can you learn from your best clients? Can you guys get that in front of you?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right, I will tell you, I've never done this exercise with an FA and not had some things become obvious. Let's give me the first name of your best client.
Mine?
Yeah.
Nancy.
Okay, as you look at these questions, just answer each question. We don't have to read it each time, but when you look at Nancy, how did Nancy come into your practice?
She was the plan sponsor of a 401k.
Okay, and you have her as an individual client. You have
yes.
her as a client. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
How long has she been with you?
almost 20 years.
Wow. How long have you been in the business?
23 years.
She took a big chance, didn't she?
Yeah.
I told a young FA, I told an FA once, I said, if you knew how little you knew when you first started,
yeah,
you'd have never picked up, you'd never picked up the phone. All right, what's the...
Hiding under our desk.
Say it again?
I said we'd be hiding under our desk, you know, not answering the phone.
For sure, for sure. Number three, what's the status of her planning?
It's all been updated.
All right. Number four.
No, she has one other advisor at her accounting firm that handles a trust for her. But I'm the main planning person.
Okay, but as far as she's got money away from you, is that what?
Yes, yeah.
Correct. You know how much?
I would say probably right now they manage a marital trust. And so I would say probably about $20 million.
Wow, is that something that you can handle?
The thing is they have a lot of assets that were positioned though about 15 years ago that we can't hold here.
Okay.
DFA assets.
What kind of assets?
I don't know. DFA, they're DFA funds, and they have big, big capital gains in them.
Yeah. All right. All right. But you know it's there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all part of the plan. I actually even advise on it a little bit with them.
All right. What's the status of her will?
Updated. Everything's been updated.
All right. Sure. How would she describe you to a friend?
I think she'd very trustworthy. Follow through is good.
Look at the choices there on number six. How would you?
Oh, I got you. Okay. A planner. I'm sorry. A planner.
Okay. And has she given you a referral in the last 12 months?
Yes.
All right. And does she give you referrals regularly?
I would say not, you know, I'd say probably once a year I get a referral from her.
Okay. Now let's do, I'm probably going to go a little bit over if you all have the time. You got a few more minutes after the bottom of the
hour?
Sure. Or the top of the
hour? Sure.
Okay. Let's do another one. Pick number nine. Pick your number nine client and just give me the answers.
So number one, referred client from I've had him for about 7 years. The financial plan has not been updated for a couple years now. They live out of state, but I know that's not a question. I'm not their only advisor.
Okay.
Where
is that other money?
It's with TIAA CREF.
So that's nothing you can get at.
Yeah, no, I probably could if I really, really pushed at it, but it's kind of in their system. They got a bunch of annuities that they're taking and all that, pensions and things like that.
Yeah. All right. Number five.
Number five, updated. Yeah, it's been updated. Number six, probably a wealth manager versus a planner.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't given me a referral in the past 12 months.
Okay. And what would be your best guess of why they have not given you a referral?
One is probably because I haven't asked for one. Two is that they live out of state. I would think that might be a deterrent for them, but probably just because I haven't asked.
Okay. I understand the out of state thing. Why haven't you asked?
Um, Probably because, to be honest, I'm pretty full right now. I need to get better at increasing my capacity for taking on new clients. And the other thing that's a little bit of a, I need to set a minimum with them. Sometimes I'm a little bit nervous to ask for referrals, not because they'll say no, you know, it's just because maybe they'll give me one that doesn't fit my practice, and then what do I do from there? I always kind of feel like I paint myself in a little bit of a corner.
Well, boy, you brought up a bunch of good stuff here. There are two major reasons that people don't ask for referrals. This is my experience. Number one is two reasons people don't get referrals. Number one, they don't ask. And number two, FAs start making stuff up. I've never asked before, so they're going to wonder if my practice is hurting. I might insult them. They're going to, you know, you just make up things. So as you look at this list, I would bet for both of you, if you looked at your top 20, that if you look at question two, you're going to have the smallest number of your best clients in the 0 to 5 year range. Without looking it up, would that be your gut also?
Yeah, I would say that. Yeah.
Okay. So here's what I want you to make up from that. Every market in this country is competitive. Whether it's in New York City or it's in Columbia, Tennessee, it's competitive. Your clients would leave if your clients were not happy. They would leave. They have options. You know this. I don't know if you ever thought about it before. Both of you have good clients who are on somebody else's prospect list. They could leave if they wanted to. So what I make up from that is that they like you, they trust you, and why I make that up is because they would leave. So that what you describe for me, Chris, is, you know, number one, I don't ask. Number two, I'm just uncomfortable. There are people out there who need your type of practice. There are people out there who are in our business who aren't unethical. They're just not very good at what they do. What we find is the number one driver of client satisfaction is proactive FA contact. The number one reason FAs give for losing clients is failure to contact clients on a regular basis. So there's a thirst out there for people like you who have a smaller practice, intentionally smaller practice, so that they can give a premium level of service. Do you see how all that connects?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and if they gave me a referral, it would be a premium level of service. The issue that I'm having is I give a lot of my clients premium levels of service, and giving 100 clients premium level service takes a lot of time. And you know, adding 10 more, I just need somewhere to let go of my bottom part of my client to still get that premium level of service. So there's only so many hours a day you can give premium level service. You can't give it, you know.
No, you are absolutely right. The number one reason that people don't get out of Supernova what they want to get out of Supernova is failure to bring the practice down to its core. So when you say that you've got you're full, one of the reasons you're not asking for referrals is you're full, does that say we ought to take another look at your minimum for new business? Now, again, we're talking about minimums. That's not applied to your existing practice. That's applied to new business.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're full, Chris, you there aren't very many ways that you can increase capacity. I mean, number one is fewer clients. Number two is a higher minimum, and number three is to add another head bring in another FA. That's the last thing I want to talk about. I mean, I don't think that's in the picture right now. So, if you're full and you're focused on premium service, how are you going to create more time to bring, how are you going to create the capacity to bring in bigger clients and still have a life?
That was part of the sign up for the coaching, I guess. You know, that's kind of one of these issues I wanted to tackle. I don't want to monopolize the call. I want Mike to get as much as he can out of it too. And if I have to maybe give you a call on the outside and maybe go on some one on one with you, I'd be more than happy to do that.
Mike, when you've heard that you've heard the question, if you looked at your let's just pick the third person on your list. You got it?
Yep.
Okay, answer those questions for me. I'm not going to read them. Just give me the answers to the seven questions.
Actually, I didn't get the questionnaire or the worksheet there.
Just go off that.
Mike, I sent that out this morning. Did you not get the email?
If I did, I didn't see it. I've been out of the office for the last 4 days, so yeah. I had a lot of emails going through.
All right. Would you let me know if you don't have if you didn't get that email, because I must have an incorrect email address. So go through the seven questions for your number three client.
Okay. So she basically came into my practice about 6 years ago.
All right. How'd she come into your practice?
I took over a retiring advisor's book.
Okay. All right. So she's been with you roughly 5 years. Go to number three.
Okay. Yes, planning is up to date.
Okay.
She has one other advisor.
Do you think you're the primary advisor?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So, and status that will is updated. I'm not exactly. I think she would probably refer to me as financial advisor.
Okay.
And no, she has not given me a referral in the past 12 months.
All right. Have you asked her for a referral, or have you started a referral conversation in the last 12 months?
No, I have not.
All right. Okay. This is the same thing I was talking to Chris about. The majority of your best clients have been with you for a significant period of time. Am I right?
Yes.
All right. And what I said to Chris is these people would leave if they weren't happy. So the issue becomes, guys, how do you create, from what you've told me, both of you, how do I create the capacity to have room to keep my clients happy and service existing clients? Because what you're going to be using to attract new clients is your service model. You have to deliver it. So I'm going to ask you to fill in the blank. I would be willing, let me put it a different way. How much production, how many households do you have, Mike?
About 100.
Okay. To get down to 80. And I'm going to ask you to guess, and then I'm going to ask you to do something as part of the homework. How much, here's what I'm trying to get to. If I give up 5% of my production and to get down to 80 clients, that's a pretty good trade for me because I create the capacity to grow. You understand? How much production would you be willing to walk away from to get down to 80 households?
And actually, I would have the capacity.
So okay. I just need to start using the script and asking for referrals.
But you said you had 100 households. Are you? How do you have capacity if you've got 100 households?
Some of them are butlers.
Okay. All right. So you have the capacity to bring on more business.
Yes.
Terrific. All right. All right. I'm going to ask you the same question, Chris. If you could get, how much production would you be willing to walk away from to get down to 80 households?
Okay. All right.
You know, if this were Eden,
I'm trying to feel the pain. I'm trying to feel the pain here as far as the dollar amount, you know. So
I'd probably
let go of probably 75 to 100,000, I would think. Probably 75 to increase, to build.
Okay. All right. Now, you say you feel the pain. I want you to feel the other side of that. Can you feel the peace of only having 80 households? That means with 100 households.
Yeah, I can feel that. Yeah, I can feel that. A lot easier than I can feel the pain, actually, but yes.
We're essays. We always find pain first.
Yeah,
you know, that'd be a great interview question. What do you think of most, pain or the plus side? And
if
somebody feels the pain, they're probably a candidate. Okay.
Yeah.
When you have 100 people, that's 5 a day. You have a full day. Now that's in reality, if you've got 5 calls, that's not 5 hours, because some of those are non-review calls. So, if you got down to 80, Chris, that's 4 calls a day, and you can say now you have control of your calendar, a little more control of your calendar, and you could say I want to do 5 a day Monday through Thursday, and I don't ever want to be scheduled on Friday, just so you have more flexibility. So here's what I would – well, I'm going to summarize it in a second. Now, I want to do one other thing and then wrap it up. I sent you something called the practice overview template. I sent you that. We talked about that last time. You know what I'm talking about, guys?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you had a chance to do any work on that, Chris?
Yes.
Okay, give me what you've got under basic beliefs.
Okay, so I have I feel like my basic belief is my goal is doing whatever I can to achieve the client's goals, because we have a financial planning software here, and it's just goal oriented, and you know, when you review it every year with them, I mean, you're pretty much your feet to the fire to make sure that plan's working. I feel a real sense of responsibility on that. I also feel that advisors should have a little bit of empathy towards clients in terms of putting themselves in their shoes. I know retirement's going to be kind of tough for me. So, as far as a lot of things to handle. So I think that you should, I think that empathy's a big deal on that. I think wealth management is really the reason why we're in business, not the portfolio management. So that's where we add our value. I think relationships are based on trust, competency, and also the follow through. So I think it's important to keep up with the certifications, trying to kind of improve your skills, and then just the bottom line is I think we need to earn our compensation. We have a lot of autonomy in this business. We can do. We have a very flexible schedule. So I think that earn our compensation. I think that's another key point.
Okay. You're talking about planning. I think of planning as what clients can expect, versus I hear what you're saying.
I think this is a planning-driven business, mm-hmm. but that fits more for me under what clients can expect. Think about the Supernova, our service model, your service model. It's regularly scheduled contact. Clients can expect regularly scheduled contact. That's awfully attractive to a prospect who hasn't heard from their FA in 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Rapid response to any client questions, problems, inquiries. That's the second of the three. And the third is multi-generational and fully implemented planning.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people out there, Chris, do planning, but they focus on the asset side and then they kind of put it back on the shelf. I don't say that covers everybody, but it covers a lot of folks. So those are things that fit under what clients can expect. From the basic belief, I wrote down two that I think fit there. A trust. That's the basis of any relationship. And the way I would put that is, trust is important in any relationship. Competency. That's part of the, your CFP. Competency is part of the code of ethics or the principles. I forget which. Now let's go down to give me something you expect of clients.
I'd say reasonable callback times. I would say reasonable returning of any type of paperwork we need. And I'd also, I need assistance in implementing the wealth management strategy as well. You know, we can't do it all. So I kind of need them to buy in on that and maybe not do it, when we have a list of things we need to complete. We can only do so much. But if it's on their side, I expect them to complete it in a reasonable time. Not the next day, but I don't need things waiting for 6 months, before it gets done, because then I don't achieve what the task was.
Well, think about, from what you said, I'm summarize a little bit. Honoring, you expect clients to honor scheduled appointments. Is that fair?
Yeah, I'd say that's fair, yeah.
That sends a message. Your dentist expects you to show up when you say you're going to show up. Your doctor expects that. We expect that too. We expect people to honor their schedule just like they do with their other professionals. Here's something else that I think should go in there. And again, I don't want to do this for you because just going through the exercise is helpful. You want introduction to other trusted professionals so that you can be part of a coordinated effort. Is that, you see where you're going there?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah. What else do you expect from clients? Prompt notification of any changes to, how would you put that? Any changes to, risk tolerance, or financial situation. Compliance would love that. Those are the kind of things I'm looking for. And what I want this to do is, number one, I want people to see what your practice looks like, but I also want them to see what you expect of them. Have you ever told a client what you expect of them?
I think not in a, task oriented manner or a bullet pointed view like that.
But do you see the message you're sending when you say, here's who I am. Those are your basic beliefs. Here is what you can expect of me.
Mm-hmm.
Here is what I expect of you. I feel organization. I feel honesty. I feel disclosure. And I feel professionalism. You're not some guy hanging around waiting for the phone to ring. You're running a practice. So this is really, really important. The work is important, getting this together, and then being able to deliver this to your clients and explain it to them, delivering it to prospects, and delivering it to your centers of influence. Mike, I know you've been out for 4 days. Have you had any chance to work on this?
I did. I put a couple things down as far as under my basic beliefs. And
okay.
They're more general, but I just had down honesty and integrity and
yeah.
Trust. I didn't really have anything down what I'm expecting from clients. What clients can expect from me, world-class service, comprehensive financial planning, leadership, and execution.
All right. All right. Now, did you go through Supernova previously when Chris did?
Yes. Yes.
All right. So you understand your service model. What else would fit in there? And I know I just said this to Chris. What else would fit in there? Regularly scheduled contact, rapid response to any questions, problems, inquiries, multi-generational and fully implemented planning. These are things, Mike, when a prospect sees this, you're different. Anything you would add to what you expect of clients? Anything to add to what Chris gave me?
No, I think that sounded good.
Okay. All right. I don't see it in my notes, but here's when you get this put together, you're going to send it to compliance. And this gets through compliance at your firm with some minor, unless you just put what you can expect, 20% returns. Compliance likes it. So once you get it through compliance, we're going to talk about how to deliver this to a client, to a center of influence, and to a prospect. I was working with a fellow yesterday, in New York City, and he was getting $1.5 million from an existing, getting a new client was $1.5 million. And the client started listening to somebody else, and he was bad mouthing this guy's firm, and the client called, said, don't do anything with the money. And he brought up the thing with the other guy bad mouthing the firm. So he said, just don't do anything with the money. The client called back and said, I'm leaving the money there. You have such a great reputation. And the FA thought a lot of that was his practice overview. He also had some other designations and some recognition. But the client was very, very comfortable knowing what he was going to get. This is a big, big deal for you to be able to put down one sheet of paper what your practice looks like and then take it to those three groups of people. So what I would ask you to do is to put this together as best as you can, including up at the top where you get a brief description of Chris, you'd give a brief description of who you are and then a description of what you do. And the same thing for you, Mike. And then fill out those other three. Now, these bullets, as I told you 2 weeks ago, there's five bullets there. They can be, it has to be at least three. And they don't have to be three in each category. But do it as best you can and then email it to me and let me look at it and help you out a little bit. So that's the first part of the homework. Here's the other part, and it gets back to the question I asked you all about how much you would be willing to give up. Chris, look at getting down to 90 clients and tell me if you got down to 90, how much production you'd be giving up.
Yeah.
Pretty easy exercise. And then look at 80 and see how much production you would be giving up. Again, I'm not going to tell you what I want this to do is paint a picture for you. Again, I'm your consultant. I'm not your boss. I'll tell you my best thinking. But if you went through that and found out if you got down to 90 clients, I'll just say something ridiculous to make a point. If you were going to get down to 90 clients and it was going to cost you $5,000 in production, that's a slam dunk, correct?
Oh, yeah.
So there's a tipping point there. I'm willing to walk away from X to get down to 90 or 80 clients. Got it?
Got it.
And here's the bet you're making. If I got down to 80 clients, I'm just making it up, and I had to give up $200,000 in production, with that extra time that I've created, could I replace that production in a year with better clients? That's the bet you're making. All right?
Yep.
All right, guys. Good to talk with you. I don't know when the next one's scheduled, but it's on the calendar somewhere.
All right, great. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks.
All right, thanks, Rob.
Bye.